swimming with sharks and sea lions, and taking selfies with tortoises, today we're headed to the Galapagos.
Welcome to Vacation Mavens, a family travel podcast with ideas for your next vacation and tips to get you out the door. Here are your hosts, Kim from Stuffed Suitcase and Tamara from We Three Travel.
So Tamara, we are going to be chatting about the Galapagos Islands, which I think a lot of people associate with animals, definitely. So I thought maybe we should chat about some wildlife that we've seen on our travels, because especially I know that Hannah and my girls too are huge wildlife fans when they travel. So
yeah, it's always fun when you get to see something. Although I still have some things that I feel like living in New England, I should have seen already, especially moose, you know, but I can never seem to spot one in the wild.
I know we live, of course, in the Pacific Northwest. You'd think we see bears all the time, but no, it's actually been a rare occurrence, thankfully.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because when I think about, I haven't been to very many exotic destinations. And so one of our major wildlife encounters was seeing bears in both Yellowstone and in Shenandoah National Park. And in Yellowstone, it was super exciting, but it was very controlled environment. Like one time with Yellowstone, we were just driving and you saw a lot of people slowed down, and it was because there was like a black bear making its way across the hill. And then one time we were driving and we saw a whole bunch of people pulled over. And so we pulled over also and we walked down and there was the grizzly bear across the river, which I think I've talked about before, but that it still wasn't like we were just on a hike and then there was a bear, because that would be really scary.
Yeah. I think that's the fear, right? You're walking,
yeah, it's like, I want
the
to forest see them.
That's in right. Front of you. Yeah. I like the safety of a car, you know?
Well, and even when we were in Shenandoah, we're at a pretty overlook and we stopped and we're like taking a picture and I hear this rustling and I'm like, what's going on? And then I see a whole tree moving. But luckily we were really close to the car. And so then I could see that it was a bear and it looked kind of small. So I figured mama's probably around and yikes. I'm not going to go close, but it was really cool to just stand right next to the car, like door open, you know, and watch and see what happened.
Well, that's a pretty close encounter. We have close encounters. We have a funny story about one, because when we travel up to Canada, we see a lot of animals along the side of the roads, especially little mountain goats and then also elk. It's really popular there. And that's what we have seen of black bears. And one brown bear we actually saw in the distance was driving to Canada. So we, though, were pulled over to the side of the road taking pictures, and this mountain goat that was pretty small though decided to come up and kind of check out if we were going to give it food, I think, you know. But Paul, I laugh all the time, kind of freaked out that this animal was moving towards his open window where he had his camera, and he squealed like, oh, and rolled up the window. And so we kind of laugh from now, you know. It's always been a little inside joke with us about his little, you know, spaz over the mountain goat on the side of the road.
That's hysterical. I was just looking at making our plans for a summer road trip, and I was reading about Teddy Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota and then the Badlands and Custer National Park or State Park in South Dakota. And, you know, there are a lot of buffaloes, but I guess also in the Teddy Roosevelt National Park, there are these begging burros. So like donkeys that come up and beg from the car, but you're not supposed to feed them. But of course, I guess everyone does, because why else would they be begging, right?
Yeah.
But it almost feels like a safari, like those drive-through safaris, but then you have to remind yourself that it's real life. You know, it's not a contained environment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of safaris, that leads me into probably one of my best wildlife experiences, and it was definitely in Africa. And unfortunately, my girls weren't with me, which to this day, what I experienced with the wildlife is what makes me want to go back and take them with us. And that was when I actually was in Botswana, and we went up to Chobe National Park, and we stayed in a lodge that's kind of like a little, I guess it was like a B&B. It was really cool. I loved the lodge. It was called Chobe. I think it's just called the Chobe River Lodge. And it was right on the Chobe River. And part of your package with your stay there is you had two river cruises and one like safari drive through Chobe National Park. And of course, the cool thing about Chobe is it's not like Kruger. There's no fences. It's an open air, like it's just open boundary park. So it's really nice. Unfortunately, that also means that there's no rhinos there any longer, but there's lots of elephants and giraffe, and we saw crocodiles. And the biggest thing that was plentiful all over, of course, are zebras and then hippopotamuses, which are actually pretty aggressive creatures. I don't know how many people know that, but I think it's something like more people die from hippos than lions.
Wow.
I think that's
true. Do they charge or what
yes.
do they do?
Yeah. So we were actually charged in the river by a hippo. They charged the boats. The driver who, you know, grew up in Africa his whole life, he laughed about it and he's like, floors it all of a sudden. And we all like are shooting in this little pontoon boat. And sure enough, like we look behind us and up comes this hippo, like kind of does a little breechy splash, you know, because he's trying to charge the boat, but the boat moved. But yeah, they're very territorial and can be aggressive. So very interesting. I was on I was on the trip with an Australian couple and my mother-in-law, and the funny thing was the Australian couple, you know, the one crocodile we saw, I guess he was, you know, there was elephants right there. There was a huge herd of some kind of, you know, antlered animal. They're all different there. Like,
right.
I don't know all the names, but it wasn't a zebra. It wasn't an elk, like whatever, one of those oryx gazelle type animals.
There are
animals.
So many different ones.
Yeah, I mean, all those different ones. And so there's this crocodile and he's evidently sunning himself according to our guide because he's just sitting there with his mouth wide open. And I guess that's how they regulate their body temperature. But of course, it looks pretty vicious when you're there. But this Australian couple, the guy like gets down at the front of the little pontoon boat and gets the driver to get him really close. And he's taking all these pictures like inside the guy's mouth practically. I mean, it was not that close, but it felt that close to me. But he's like, oh, that's not a crocodile. Because evidently the African crocodiles are nothing like what they have in Australia. So he was not worried. But still, it was kind of funny.
So when Glenn and I went to New Orleans like years and years ago, we did one of those airboat tours like you and I did to look for the alligators. And we went into the bayou and our guy jumped off the boat to swim with the alligators. And he was almost like wrestling with them and feeding them. And I'm like, you're crazy. And he's like, well, you know, I grew up here like in the bayou. And I'm like, still. Like, those are wild animals. So what I don't need to see is like you getting eaten on this.
Exactly. And then it's like, okay, who knows how to drive a boat?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's intense. I always wonder about those things. I mean, there's a big thing out here in the Pacific Northwest, of course, with our orca whales. And in the States, you have to keep a 200 meter or 200 feet, 200 yard, one of those measurements from them. And I guess Canada is just 100. And so I know one of our fellow Canadian travel writers, she's trying to help use her influence to help push that Canada needs to increase the distance too, because you know, they are wild animals. And where is that, you know, when is it okay to invade their space, you know?
That was really sad. I saw that article that she posted, and I guess, you know, it encroaches on their feeding grounds and their breeding grounds. And so it really has a huge impact on their survival. It's not just an annoyance factor.
Yeah.
So I do grapple with that. You know, we're going to talk about the Galapagos, and that's definitely one of the issues you think about. Like, okay, you want to see it, just like I want to go to Alaska and I want to go to, you know, places where I can see icebergs and things. But at the same time, you know that there is an environmental impact and an impact on the wildlife as well. And so, I mean, I know the Galapagos does a really good job of keeping that regulated, but obviously it still does. So I definitely struggle with that as a just kind of a moral dilemma, but you know, but at the same time, we are trying to move away from zoos or at least, you know, have those be more rescue oriented and, you know, for things born in the wild, but it's really, I don't know. It becomes like, well, then how are you ever going to see these things outside
it's
of,
a very slippery
you know,
slope.
Nat Geo documentaries or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you and I, we would, I mean, all of us can agree that those kind of up close interactions of with the live animals in whatever way you're getting it, that's what eventually leads to a passion in most people that will make them activists and actually to care about protecting those environments. So it's a very slippery slope, very slippery slope. So,
right. Because if you don't know about them and you haven't experienced them, then how can you be so passionate about protecting them? Yeah. You know, otherwise you'd be like, there are a countless number of horned animals in Africa. What do I care if that one goes away?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and you wonder definitely, I mean, I think the Galapagos with it, it is harder to reach. So maybe there's a little bit of, thankfully, the people who will actually spend the time and effort to get out there, hopefully they are more mindful about it. Who knows? But
right.
I don't know. There's so much stuff. I mean, I think of you because you guys went to Costa Rica and had like a sloth experience, right? And sloths are like this cool in thing right now, I think, in
we
pop culture.
We didn't see a sloth.
Oh, you
I would
didn't.
Have loved,
that's right.
I would love to see one. But yeah, no, we saw monkeys.
That's right.
We heard the howler monkeys, but we didn't see any sloths.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
I love places like this. They're like the Galapagos just seems like, you know, it's one of those things like the island that time forgot or something, you know, yeah, where there's just so many different creatures of all different types and it's still plentiful. I remember when Glenn and I were on our honeymoon in the French Polynesian Islands, it was just so, so different than being in the Caribbean. We were on some overwater bungalows and just jumping in the water and seeing all the fish around you. It blew my mind, like how much was right there. And I wonder if that's changed or I wonder if it's still the same, you know, with tourism on the rise, because you see what's happened in the Caribbean and other places where those reefs are hurting and, you know, the fish is not as plentiful. So I hope that we can keep the Galapagos that special place that it is.
Yeah, I agree, because I think that is just like you said, it's a unique spot in our world. And I mean, there's some of them all over. So hopefully we can be good citizens of the world. When I was in the American Museum of Natural History this past week, there mm-hmm. was a quote on the wall, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was like a proverb, like an African proverb, or I can't remember. It wasn't from someone, but it was basically along the lines of saying that we do not own this world. We were loaned it by our children, that kind of thing. So yeah, the idea is that, you know, you should be able to hand it over to your kids in a better condition, or at least the same condition than you got it. So it's kind of a good way to think about it. But
yeah,
I'm definitely excited. Yeah, I'm definitely excited to chat about the Galapagos and kind of hear more about this amazing set of islands.
Yeah, and Kelly, I know, did a lot of research into it. And so she's going to do a really good job of telling us like how to plan a trip ourselves. And that's, I think, is key, because it can be a very expensive destination, but if you can figure it out, it's maybe not as confusing as it seems from the outside. And she has some really good tips to share.
Yeah, definitely. Let's chat with Kelly.
Great. Okay, so this week we're here with Kelly McIntyre, and she's the founder of ForWornPassports.com. Her blog is dedicated to inspiring family gap years and global adventure travel. So welcome, Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. There's nothing I enjoy more than talking about travel with other people who love to travel.
Yeah, I love the name of your blog. Yeah. So it gives me some assumptions of how many are in your family, but can you tell us a little bit more about like where do you live and how many kids do you have and what your background is?
Yes, I would love to. Okay, my husband and we have two daughters, and we live in the suburbs of Birmingham, Alabama. And our daughters are 16 and 18. So one is a junior and one is a senior in high school. And like you guys and like your listeners, we love to travel. And we love to travel so much that when they were in elementary school, we set a family goal to take them to every continent except for Antarctica by the time they finished high school. And so we started out with some pretty cool trips when they were in elementary school. And most of our trips we would do over Christmas break, because my husband is in residential real estate. So that made it really tricky to try to travel in the summer. And so what we realized, though, by middle school was that if we were going to meet our goal of the of the six continents by the time they finished, it was going to be really hard to do that when we were just limited to 2 weeks at Christmas time. So in middle school, we really decided to step up our game, and we pulled our girls out of middle school in their seventh and eighth grade years for half of a school year, and we traveled around the world. And that's when we came up with the name Forewarn Passports, because that was the that was when we started our blog.
That's awesome. That is so I would love to do that.
I was wondering, I thought, I wonder how they got around school. And then it's like, oh, that makes sense. I was going to ask you for all your tips.
Yes. So we are traditional school, you know, we're a traditional school-going family. But for that part of the, for that time, we homeschooled. And what we did was we pulled them out during the fall and winter, and that, of course, coincided with the slow season of real estate. So what they did that school year, they started the first 9 weeks and went August through October, and then we pulled them out from October through February, and then they finished out the school year in the spring. And it was amazing. It is hands down the greatest thing that we have ever done as a family, and I just wish everybody could have the opportunity to do it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, this morning I was so tired. I asked my daughter, she never wants to get out of bed for school. So I was like, well, if you wanted to stay home today. And she's like, no, I'm getting up. Strangely, the only thing that actually gets her out of bed is me like suggesting that she actually stay home from school. Yeah. She just will not miss school for anything. So,
That is so funny. And I can totally relate, because when we did the big trip when the girls were in middle school, you would think that they would have been so excited. They were not excited at all. And in fact, the one who was 14 at the time that we went, she told us that we were ruining her life by doing
that. That sounds a little bit like what my 13-year-old would say to me right now. She's so into her friends. It's not even about school necessarily, it's her friends. Like, she's so social. The idea of being separated from them for any length of time would just be tragic.
Yes.
She loves traveling, but...
That is so funny. Well, that is exactly where she was. My daughter was 13 when we were planning, at 14 when we left, and she literally did not speak to us for about 3 months. She did, it was to tell us how we were ruining her life.
Oh, but I'm sure she came out of it loving it.
Oh my goodness.
Of course.
I mean, within a week, it was magical. And that is the fun thing about the blog is, since when we started it, it was really to meet the homeschooling requirements. I didn't even initially set out to be like a travel blogger, but it was for them to do English and social studies and just to write about what they were experiencing and learning. Mm-hmm. But so many of our adventures are written by them, and they're hilarious to read because they're written from a 12 and a 14-year-old's perspective. And mm-hmm. I didn't go in them and edit them to make them, you know, perfect or anything. It is their real experiences, and some of them are tragic and some are funny, but you need to save those forever, for sure.
Yeah, forever. If you ever take the blog down, make sure you print them out and put them in a book or something.
Yes, for sure.
Cool. That's fabulous.
Well, we want to talk to you about one of the trips. I think you just went recently, right? But we're going to talk about the Galapagos today.
Yes, absolutely.
I cannot wait, because this is something that I kind of, you know, have dreamed about, and it would be amazing. So when did you visit the Galapagos? How long did you stay?
Right. Okay. We just went over this Christmas break, and we were there just under 2 weeks.
Okay. Nice. And did you guys fly in? How did you get down there? Like, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you set up the basics. Like,
Right. Okay. So all flights to the Galapagos go either through Quito or Guayaquil in Ecuador. And so I would recommend flying to Quito just because it is a beautiful city. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so it is totally worth seeing. And so what you'll do is you would fly into Quito, and most flights from the U.S. arrive really late at night, and so you're going to have to spend the night anyway in Quito. And so what I would tell people to do is to spend at least 2 nights and do it on the front end, so you at least have a day to check out Quito before you take off. And then you would fly from Quito into the islands, and there are two airports in the Galapagos Islands. There's one on Santa Cruz Island, and there's one on San Cristobal. And so that's how you get yourself there, and then all adventures then begin once you get into the islands.
That's good. And I know, I know that it's popular to do a cruise, but then there's like the land only or some combinations. I think the cruise is probably one of the most expensive because it's the small ships and everything. So how did you decide between which direction to go? And do you have, looking back, do you think that there's a better way to do it or not?
Right. Well, that is the big question is how do you do it? Because yes, the cruises are so expensive. And so what I would say is if money is no object, go cruise the whole thing. That's fantastic. You're going to see so much, and it's the most probably comfortable and convenient way to see the Galapagos. And then if budget was your number one concern, you could do the whole thing land-based, and you're not going to see as much, but you could still have a fantastic experience just flying in there and doing some day trips. You wouldn't be able to get to the outer islands without a cruise, but you could still see a lot of really great stuff. But if your budget is somewhere in between shoestring and extravagant, then I would do a combination of land and cruise. And that is what we did. So we're really independent travelers. So if we can do things on our own, we'd like to do things on our own. And I'm really budget conscious. So I always try to figure out how can I get the biggest experience for the best value. So what I figured out is that there are three main islands in the Galapagos that are populated, that have huge tourism infrastructure. You know, they have hotels, they have restaurants, they have tour guides to set up snorkeling tours or hiking tours or whatever. And those three islands are Santa Cruz, San Cristobal, and those are the two with the airports. And then the third one is Isabela. So just on those three islands, you can fly down there. There are all kinds of day trips you can do around those islands and to some other little islands nearby. And then what I would do is combine that with a strategically find a short cruise that will take you to the outer islands. So you're really just maximizing your time on the cruise to get you to the far away stuff without spending a ton of money doing that.
Yeah, that's really smart. That makes sense.
Did you ever, like, are the two with the airports, are they right next to each other, or would it make sense to fly into one of those airports but fly out of the other one?
Ah, that's perfect. That is exactly the way to do it.
Okay.
Yes. So, in fact, so that was what we did. We flew to Santa Cruz and we spent a couple of days there. And some of the things, there are several great things to do right there on Santa Cruz that are completely free. There is Tortuga Bay, which is probably the most beautiful beach in the Galapagos.
Mm-hmm. I've heard There's that this, one.
Have you? Yeah, it is stunning. You go on a pretty good hike. Maybe, I mean, it's not a long hike. It's not like 10 miles. It's like a mile or two through just the most interesting landscape. And then it takes you to this massive, expansive beach with, of course, sea lions and marine iguanas and all those sorts of things. And then also on Santa Cruz, and also that is completely free, is this great swimming hole called Las Grietas. And pardon my Spanish, I had 2 years about 30 years ago, so it's pretty poor. But you just take an 80-cent water taxi to get to the trailhead to then walk through some more amazing landscape to this really cool swimming hole. Then they have the fish market where the fishermen come in each day, and there are so many creatures just roaming around the fish market. It's worth just hanging out at the fish market just to see the pelicans and the sea lions and the iguanas and all that hovering around. But I would say spend a couple of days on Santa Cruz, and then you can take a little speedboat ferry over to Isabela. And Isabela is awesome. It was our favorite of the three big islands. It was just fabulous. And they have a snorkeling tour there, and it's called Los Tenelas. And there are seahorses, like big seahorses, giant seahorses, the giant Galapagos seahorses. They're like a foot large.
Wow. Oh,
I know. And what is crazy about this Los Tonelos? Well, in addition to seahorses, you'll swim with sea turtles that when you're next to them, you feel like they are as big as Volkswagens. Mm-hmm. They're huge. There are sharks, but the reef
like, okay,
sharks,
I'm out.
I know we were kind of panicking, but they're not aggressive sharks. But what is so interesting is that a lot of people think, oh, you can only do like the really great spectacular sights on by a cruise. But this particular snorkel, it is only available to people who are land-based. Oh. So the cruise ship people totally miss out on it.
Now, here's a quick question before we go talking, because it sounds like, you know, you're going to do great at leading us into a little bit of an itinerary planning. But did you, while you were there, it sounds like you did a lot of stuff on your own, like you said, but did you book these things through like tour companies and tour operators? And if so, did you have any advice or tips for families on like how you chose who to book with or how you found the tours you wanted?
Right. Okay. So great question. So for all of the land-based stuff, we booked all of that stuff ourselves. So the hotels, I just went on booking.com and found hotels that I liked and booked those. And then for the Los Tonelos snorkel, we also did an amazing volcano hike. And those were both on Isabella. And for those, I just Googled around until I found tour companies that did that, but just local ones. It wasn't like a big tour company, but just somebody, what would you call it? Just a guide, you know, just somebody who takes you on the excursion.
And that was through a website then? You just found they had a...
Exactly, yeah. Right. I would look on TripAdvisor, see who was recommended for different things. Mm-hmm. And we used Pahoehoe, it's Pahoehoe. And that's who we used to take us on our excursions on Isabella. Okay. And then, though, for our cruise, so that's the part where I really needed some advice, because it sounds like you guys have looked into it enough to know it can be super confusing to figure out.
Yeah, it really is.
So I think of all the travels that we've done, this trip for me was one of the most confusing in the beginning to try to sort out, because there are about 13 different islands that cruise itineraries visit. I think there are about 18 or 20 islands total. It just depends on who's counting and how they're counting. But, you know, when you're just scrolling and looking at cruise itineraries, they all just blend together when the islands don't mean anything to you, you know?
Right.
So what I did was I would look on different forums, usually on TripAdvisor, and I'd go into the Galapagos forums and just start reading about people's experiences, who they booked their cruises through. Because the cruises, like the cruise company, they do not usually book their own trips. They have brokers. And so all the different agencies usually can book on most of the different ships out there. And so what I did, because I was so confused on how to put this together, but I knew that I wanted to just pay for a cruise that was going to take us to the stuff I couldn't do myself. And so I sent some emails to a couple of different agencies that I'd read about that had good reviews, and basically just asked them that question. Just, hey, we're independent travelers. I want to try to do the inner island stuff as much as I can myself. And I'm just looking for a cruise that could take me from one island and end up on another island, like you guys had suggested. And how do you recommend that? And Happy Gringo is the one who came back and just gave me the best suggestion of all. So that was how, and I booked through them for our cruise piece. Yes. Okay. And it was perfect, because what it did was, so we flew into Santa Cruz. We did that part by ourselves. We went over to Isabella and we spent 3 days there and did that part by ourselves. We went back to Santa Cruz, because all the cruises either begin or end on San Cristobal and Santa Cruz, since those are the two islands with the airports. So we picked up the boat on Santa Cruz, and then it took us to two outer islands, Floriana and Española, and then it ended on San Cristobal. So it was a great way to get between two of the major islands, but also be able to squeeze in some outer islands. Perfect.
Yeah, that's smart.
What do your days look like on the cruise? Is it pretty much, you know, you're moving from one place to the other and you have some naturalist kind of guided excursions, or what is it like?
Yes. Okay. Right. It is nothing like a Caribbean cruise. You are up at dawn. You're probably up at about 6 and you're eating breakfast and you're going on your first adventure, whether it's a snorkel or a hike. And then you're coming back to the boat and you're eating breakfast. And usually you would see about 3 spots a day. So some combination of snorkeling and hiking on each island. So you'd basically go out morning, noon, and afternoon for different excursions. And as you mentioned, you do have a naturalist, and there is the national park guidelines require 1 naturalist per every 16 people. So what you'll find with the boats is that the capacity tends to be in increments of 16. So we were on a 16 passenger boat. There are some 32 passenger boats. There are some even 48 or 96 passenger boats. But we did a 16 passenger and it was just fabulous. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend that, because you can't have more than 16 people go to shore or do a hike or anything. You're limited to 16 people at once. So if you're on a boat that has 32 people or 48 or 96, then you're going in shifts to see this stuff.
That's so good to know.
Yeah.
How was the water on being in such a small boat, though? Did you feel it a lot? Like, did you get seasick?
You know, 3 out of the 4 of us really have problems with seasickness. And we have found that the magic combination for us, and I'm not giving medical advice here, and I don't even know if I would recommend it. I'm just going to tell you it works for us, is that we do the scopolamine patch.
Yep.
And then we double up and we do bonine on top of that, or meclizine.
Mm-hmm.
And that combination, we are all fine. Now, our mouths feel like we poured a bucket of sand in them.
Oh, that's tough.
Makes
yeah.
your mouth really dry.
Yep.
But I would rather have a dry mouth than be barfing over the side of the boat.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I get seasick on massive cruise ships, and those patches are the only thing that saved me. But yeah, it's like I have crusty eyes and dry mouth, or it's brutal. But
yes,
I would rather have that any day over what seasickness feels like. I've tried to explain that to my husband. Like, he doesn't get it. I'm like, you have no idea what it feels like, how bad it is. So.
It's so terrible.
Well, it's good to know 3 of the 4 of you suffer from it and you still did this kind of vacation, because that's the one thing for me. I'm just like, I don't know if I could ever even do it, just because I worry about the seasickness. I mean, I get sick snorkeling. So it's like,
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yes. No, absolutely. I would definitely encourage people not to let that hold them back, because if you are properly medicated, it is fine. And but what we do, we always make sure that we book the cabins, the lowest cabins in the boat.
Okay.
And on the 16 passenger boats, there are 3 levels of cabins. So, So the lowest level, at least the way our boat was laid out, and I think most of the 16 passenger boats are laid out similarly, there were 4 cabins on the bottom level, and then 2 on the middle, and then 2 on the upper. And I know the people in the upper definitely could feel a lot more rocking than we could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good to know.
So I know you said that you booked through Happy Gringo, but what was the name of the cruise company?
Oh, yes. Okay. So the boat that we took, it was called the Eden. It's the MY Eden yacht.
Okay.
And the name of the company of that is Ada Maria. And I believe it's AIDA Maria.
Okay.
But yes, we really loved the Eden.
That's so how many days did you end up being on the cruise portion of it?
The cruise portion was 4 days, 3 nights.
Okay.
So the first day was Santa Cruz, and then we went to Floriana one day, Española one day, and then ended on San Cristobal.
Okay. So you've got 2 to 3 days in Santa Cruz, then you went over to Isabela. And
yes.
That was, so the Isabela time, how much time did you spend over there? Because
we did 3 days there.
And then you went back to Santa Cruz and then out.
Yes.
4 days on that one. And then you came back to San Cristobal. How long did you spend there?
We spent 2 days there on the back end. So after we got off the boat, we spent another 2 nights there.
And then you flew out from there on your third day on that
exactly.
island.
Okay. Yes, we did. And we, when we did it, we did keto on the back end, and I wouldn't recommend that. It's much more efficient. Plus you're just fresh on the front end, you know, by the end of the big trip, everybody was kind of ready to go home.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a great tip. So what are some of the other must-sees and must-dos in the Galapagos that you, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of great things, but, you know, can you broaden on? Are there any other, like the volcano hike you said, and any other little snorkeling spots that are must-sees?
Yes. Okay. Well, as far as the wildlife, then of course you're going to see the giant tortoises, and they're fabulous. So you're going to see those. You've got to see the blue-footed boobies, and as far as sites, let's see. Well, certainly I told you about Tortuga Bay and Los Tenelos. Oh, on Floriana, there is a place called Post Office Bay. And this was one of those places, you know how like when you plan a trip and you think you've planned all this stuff and you think you know what the highlights are going to be, and then just something else, you come across something else that turns out to be one of the highlights and you didn't even know anything about it.
Yeah.
Well, that's how this Post Office Bay was. So this Post Office Bay is the site of a 200-year Galapagos tradition, and there's a barrel that sits on the beach on Post Office Bay, and the barrel has been there. Well, not this exact barrel. I think it's been replaced a couple of times, but it's been there since the late 1700s, when the whalers used to come through, and the whalers would go on these expeditions that would last months and sometimes even years. And Floriana Island was a pit stop for the whalers. And so they set up this barrel where they would drop letters to their loved ones back home. So when other whalers came through going in the opposite direction, they would look through the barrel, and if they saw something addressed to a place near their destination, they would take the letter and they would hand deliver it. Okay, so I know, well, this tradition is still going on, but the tradition now is that travelers leave postcards. And so when you go there, you get to go to this little makeshift post office, which is still just this barrel in the sand, but inside the barrel are these giant Ziploc bags stuffed with postcards that have been addressed. And so you go through the postcards, and there were probably 100 there, and we sifted through about 100, and we found 3 postcards to hand deliver.
Wow.
And I know.
Like in Gulf Shores or like?
Right, like around Birmingham.
Oh, Birmingham,
so,
yeah.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, and the tradition is you have to hand deliver them. You are not supposed to
stick them in
find
the
mail. A postcard. right. That defeats the whole point of the tradition. But we did. So we live in the suburbs of Birmingham. We found one that was right here in Birmingham. We found another in Auburn, Alabama, which is 2 hours away. And then another in Montgomery, Alabama, which is about an hour and a half away. And so it was super fun. So we brought those 3 back, and we were able to hunt the people down on Facebook and LinkedIn. And we've made one of the deliveries so far, which was a super fun experience. So I would say definitely if you can work Floriana into your itinerary to do so, because it was such a fun little surprise that we had not expected.
And come prepared with postcards.
yes, because we didn't. We only got to take them. We didn't leave any.
That's fun. So That's what really about cute. On San Cristobal, right?
Yes.
What sort of things did you get up to when you headed there to end your trip?
Oh, okay. So probably the most famous site of San Cristobal, the most famous thing to do there is a snorkel called Kicker Rock. And if you've probably seen the images of Kicker Rock, and you may not know that that was Kicker Rock, but it's these two huge like granite structures coming out of the ocean, and they're side by side. And then in between them is just this, like this alley, you know, in the ocean. And you snorkel between those two, and there are sharks in there. So
I'm out.
I know. My gosh.
She keeps getting so excited about these sharks, Tamara. Like, what?
Yeah. You're not selling us on those.
Well, Well, supposedly, my friends have told me afterward, I was very proud of myself. And she goes, you know, those are just reef sharks. They're harmless. And I'm like, but they don't feel harmless.
Yes. No, I've snorkeled with reef sharks and it was quite scary to me. And I'm one and done. I'm all set with that.
You're awesome, Callie. You snorkel with sharks. Leave it there. It doesn't matter what kind they are. They're sharks. You have props right. for me.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm glad that you're still here to tell us this story.
Yes. Well, I'm surprised we made it through because it's a pretty long stretch. And once you're in this, it's hard to explain, but it's like being in a hallway, you know.
Oh, that's just water. Sounds dreadful. It's a nightmare. You're trapped in there with the sharks.
Oh, my trapped. And my girls and I, we had our arms locked together.
Oh, my
and the three
goodness.
Of us.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. Oh. But it's actually, it is really, if you can just tell yourself, They're harmless. And just get some great GoPro video. You'll be so proud of yourself.
Goodness. My 13-year-old would love it. I know she would love it. She is such a daring thrill seeker. She would think it was the coolest thing ever. But yeah, I would hold on to them so tight. I would probably like, I'm willing to throw myself in the mouth of the shark to save them, but I also am terrible. Anyways, yeah. Okay, so sorry. Yeah, so you survived that. That was nice.
We did.
Anything else on San Cristobal?
Yeah, they have some great hikes. Oh, they have a really nice interpretation center that goes into the like Darwin's theory and just how the Galapagos came to be and all that. But really our favorite thing to do at the end of the trip, because we were, that was the very end and we were almost 2 weeks in. So we were exhausted, but right next to the place where we stayed was just this little locals beach called Playa Man. And we just enjoyed hanging out there and just the sea lions literally would come up and they would practically be on your beach towel with you. And the pups would be playing. So it was just a really kind of fun, chill way to end the trip.
Nice. So do you mind, let me just ask really quick, what's the weather like there? And are there seasons that are better for traveling or?
Right. Okay. So because it's basically along the equator, the weather doesn't change that much throughout the year. But the water temperatures do. And water temperatures, I believe, in the summer are warmer than they are in the winter. And so the water, that is one thing to know. Like, I hate cold water. I am from the deep south. I like really warm water. And even though this is along the equator, the water is not warm. So you're going to be in a full wetsuit when you're snorkeling. And I've read some stuff from people who've gone in the summer, and it's not as cold, but still, based on what I'd read, I would personally be in a wetsuit year round there.
Okay.
But the ambient temperature is perfect. It was in the 70s every day.
Nice.
So, oh my gosh, it was so perfect. And we didn't have any rain. It was just beautiful every day. You were just so comfortable. You never got hot. You never got cold. I can't even tell you just how perfect the weather was.
That's good. That's just really good. So you told us a lot about what to do and some of the activities, but what about where to stay? Did you have any favorite hotels?
We did. So on the front, or well, I would recommend on the front end. For us, it was on the back end to go to Quito. When you do go to Quito, I would highly recommend staying in the historic district, because that's the whole reason that you're going there, is to see the historic city. And if you stay in the historic district, then you're really walking distance to everything that you'd want to see. And we stayed in this amazing two-bedroom, two-bath loft in the historic district that I found on Airbnb. And it was built like in the 1500s, but it had been totally updated. So it was really a treat. But in the islands themselves, our favorite place that we stayed was on San Cristobal, and it's called Galeadon Suites, and it's spelled Galeodan. And it was just this great studio apartment, but with this huge balcony that overlooked the port. and we loved it. And it was just steps from that Playa Man that I told you about. And that was our favorite hotel that we stayed in while we were there.
That sounds really good. So moving on to maybe some tips for families that they should know leading in, what kind of budget are you saying people should maybe be prepared for? Like, what was your maybe ideas on flights or hotel costs or even the cruise cost for the short one?
Right. Okay. Well, what I did, because I am a huge nerd and I am obsessive about tracking our spending when we travel and then also comparing it with other itineraries. I just love to know that we got the best value is really what it comes down to. And so what I did after our trip is I really analyzed what it ended up costing us versus if we had done the same trip that we had booked through a travel agent versus if we had done a similar itinerary and the entire thing being on a cruise. So you can kind of see all three versions. Mm-hmm. And if somebody wanted to do the whole thing on a cruise, and it would be like a 9-day trip with a week of it on the cruise and then a night on the front and back end in Quito, that is around $6,500 per person. And then, I know, exactly, gulp, big gulp. And then if you did our itinerary, but booked it all through a travel agent, then that came to around $4,400 per person. And that was for 7 nights. That was 3 nights on the cruise and then 2 nights on Santa Cruz, 2 nights on Isabella, 7 nights, $4,400. Or if you do everything yourself the way I've laid out, and for 11 nights, it was just under $2,800 per person.
Wow. That's
much more doable.
Yeah,
I know.
I mean, still not cheap, and we know that, but still.
Right.
But that's like very affordable. Like when I think of a Galapagos trip, I mean, that's. Now, are you including airfare on those?
Okay. Yes. Thank you for asking that. That does not include the airfare to Quito.
Okay.
That's everything, but it does include the airfare from Quito into the islands and then everything within the islands.
Okay.
And I just only because everybody is going to have different airfares to get to Quito.
Yeah, I'm sure Seattle, it's really cheap, Tamara.
It would not be cheap for me either. I don't think it's really cheap for anyone. So.
There's probably
maybe
like one
if you live in Miami, it's not too bad. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably have to be in Florida, right?
or
Texas, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Southern California.
California. Maybe I could get to California. Maybe it would be cheap. Who knows? It'd be interesting to research that. But yeah, thank you for doing all that. I'm glad you did all that research because it really pays off for all of us. Now we know.
Yes. Well, I know when we first started looking at these trips, and we've looked at them for about 5 years, and my husband and I were just like, no way. That's crazy. That is a crazy amount of money. But we just kept coming back to the idea of it. And then I thought, you know what? There has to be a way to do this at a much more reasonable cost. And there totally is. It's just the cheap way isn't going to be advertised. You've got to hunt for that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You got to put in some work and effort. Kind of like those people with Coupon, right?
Coupon. Exactly.
Like, you look at all the work they do. I'm just kind of like, yeah, I can't spend my time on that. But for travel, that might be worth it for me.
And there's a little bit more risk in there, right? When you're trying out some things that you found on the internet that, you know, if you don't know someone personally. So there's like a little bit more of that. But at least like you clearly did your research with reading their TripAdvisor reviews and all of that. Because I think that's one of the things that people get a little bit nervous about, you know, especially in another country where you don't know what the standards are for licensing and things.
Licensing, yeah. So what about other tips, Kelly? Do you have any other things that families should know about before they go or when they're planning, especially maybe packing tips? I'm thinking snorkeling and stuff, but any other tips?
Right. Well, it's interesting to find out, and I didn't realize this before we went, that Ecuador is on the U.S. dollar. So that's just super convenient that you don't even have to deal with currency conversion or having to hit the ATM as soon as you get there to get cash. You can just take, and that's what we did, because I don't love using ATMs if I don't have to in foreign places. And so we just took enough cash with us to get us through. Because that is the tip, by the way, take cash, because on Isabella, there are no ATMs and they do not take credit cards. Well, most places do not take credit cards. And if they do, they will charge you a pretty hefty surcharge.
Wow. Like even the hotel?
Yes. Okay. So.
Hmm. Wow.
Take cash.
That's so unexpected. Yeah.
Right. I know. So
I
just take
them
into you.
Like, taking that. How much was your hotel cost on like?
Okay.
Like,
well, now a lot of that though, I had paid that stuff in advance.
Okay.
Because I had paid that.
Oh, phew. Okay. Good.
Right.
Because
right.
I was like, I can't imagine like back like $250 a night, you know, for 11
right,
nights.
Right.
Like,
exactly. No,
she's
no.
a robbery waiting to happen.
that's
great
funny
tip, though.
Right. So what we did before we left, we had paid for our snorkeling tours and our hotels and our cruise. So really the cash we were taking, it was tip money, it was food money, you know, it was spending money, but it wasn't for the big ticket stuff had already been paid for.
Nice. And is it a lot, if it's the US dollar, is it a lot of English speaking as well as Spanish or?
It's not a ton of English speaking.
Okay.
Yeah, not a ton, but you get by.
And food, I take it food was easy to find and no problems there?
Yeah, super easy to find. In fact, this is a little nugget. On Santa Cruz, there is this little street that they call Kiosk Street. And I don't think that's the official name, but that's what everybody calls it. And they just have all these food kiosks. And it is so super cheap to eat there. We ate there a couple of times. Actually, probably four times in 2 days, because you could get lobster tail for $3.
Wow.
Like a fresh off the boat lobster tail. So, right. So nice. That's a good little nugget to put away. And of course, the restaurants along the water are going to be more expensive. But if you can find those great little locals places, then it's really reasonable.
And you didn't have any trouble with the local foods or water or anything?
We did not. So, of course, we were bottled water the whole time, but none of us even got the slightest stomach ache, or we didn't have any problems at all with the food. And we're fairly adventurous. I mean, we'll eat at the locals' kiosks and those sorts of places, and we had no problems.
So what about with snorkeling gear and packing? Is there anything specific you would recommend for families to definitely add to their packing list or shopping list before they go?
Right. So we took our mask and snorkels. We did not take fins because we all just travel really lightly with one bag and we try to just do carry on. But on the way down, we did check because we took a ton of sunscreen, and that you do want to take that with you because it's pretty expensive down there and you're going to go through a ton of sunscreen. So
do you have to use this special sunscreen that's like safe for the... Yeah.
Right. So nobody ever mentioned it. So in the rules that we got from the cruise, they didn't say you had to. So I ordered a bottle because I really thought that it might be required, but it wasn't.
Huh. Because even in Mexico, a lot of the, at least along like the Riviera Maya and such, especially if you're going to go in the cenotes, you have to use the special sunscreen. So I think it's probably a good idea for all of us to
do your part, even if it's not required, right?
Right. Yeah. There you go. That would be safe. But what you could do is take both kinds. So when you're just doing the hikes, you're not using the expensive stuff, and then save that for when you're getting in the water. But, well, that's something else to think about too, though, is for us, most of the time we were in the water, we were totally covered with the
wetsuit.
Yes. Thank you. With the wetsuits. But you are along the equator and it's not warm, so you're not getting hot, so you aren't really thinking about the sunscreen, so you have to be really diligent to remember to keep it on.
Yeah.
And you definitely need to pack a wide-brimmed hat. And it has to have a chin strap because when you're on the little speedboats, it's going to get blown off. Right. And let's see, what else? Nothing fancy. The whole place is super casual. There's really nothing fancy going on, so just comfortable clothes that you can hike in and lounge in.
Good.
Well, these are such great tips. I feel much more prepared because it's, I think I have this when people ask me about Iceland, because it's like so overwhelming to start to plan a trip there. But once you've figured it out and you've cracked that nut, then, you know, then it becomes much more obvious seeming. So I feel like you've opened my eyes to a lot of that, and I feel more empowered to be able to go and plan a trip on our own. So thank you so much.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you're so welcome.
Well, one of the questions that we do ask all of our guests is the best place to take a family photo to remember the trip. And I'm sure you had plenty of opportunities, but did you have a favorite?
Well, ironically, let me answer that two ways, because our favorite family photo ended up being from Quito, of all places. And that is where I would tell people to be sure to visit if they go to Quito, is to go to the Basilica. And when you go to the Basilica, you can climb to the very, very top of the spires on the outside. And it's such a fun adventure just doing that. So you end up walking across, like on a catwalk, across the top of the, over the rafters of the Basilica. And then you climb like three external ladders way, way, way up into the sky, into this spire. But from that spire, you have this amazing view of Quito, and it's just set up for the perfect photo op. So I would highly suggest that. But then when you're in the islands, I would say to be sure to get a great family photo with some of the giant tortoises. Mm-hmm. And simply because, and now in the sea lions on the beach, those are super fun too. But there are other places in the world that you could see sea lions. When you have a picture with a giant tortoise, people will know where you've been.
Yeah, great.
And then our other question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what do you wear when you travel? So you gave us some good packing tips, but, you know, what is some of your go-to things that you wear when you're traveling?
Okay, well, that is actually a really easy answer, but unfortunately, I had to learn it a really hard way. And when we did our big 5-month trip, everybody was allowed to take 3 pairs of shoes. So you had to take an athletic shoe, and then some sort of a sports sandal, and then a street shoe, so a flat or a Mary Jane. Just that was our dress-up shoe. And so you wore one and you packed 2. So at that time, Chacos were super huge where we live. And our girls were really into Chacos, and that was their sports sandal. And I had another pair of sports sandals that I was going to take. And my daughters kept going, "You have to get Chacos. You have to get Chacos." And I was like, "No, these are fine. I've got this. I don't need to go buy another pair of shoes." And so we went out on our trip, and we spent the first month or so in Europe, and it was fall. So we were in athletic shoes or street shoes the whole time. We didn't even break out our sports sandals till we got to Thailand. And then our first day on the beach, I wore what the so-called sports sandals, and between the mixture of the sand and water, got huge, massive blisters, couldn't ever wear them again, had to throw them away in Thailand, had to buy a pair of $1 flip-flops to try to get by. So I spent the rest of the trip trying to find Chacos. So wherever we went, and we went to Kuala Lumpur, which has more shopping malls, I think, in a really small area than any other place in the world. I went mall to mall to mall. I was looking online, but of course I was on the other side of the world. I couldn't even get them shipped. And then if I couldn't get them shipped, we weren't anywhere long enough to get a package. And so I was just on this Chaco quest. And so when we got home, that was the first thing I did, was I bought some Chacos, and that is my go-to travel shoe from now on.
It's a great story. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel so bad for you, but it is a great story. I'm sure it's stressful at the time, but
it's a very convincing one too.
Yes. Well, I had to listen to 5 months of, "We told you so, Mom. We told you so." And then here's a little tip on Chacos, is if you have a smallish foot, like I wear a lady's 7, a lady's 7 in Chacos is the same as a youth 5, and the youth shoes are half the cost of the adult shoes.
Yeah, so, that's a nice tip. I tried to do that with my kids as long as possible.
Right.
Mia still can kind of flip back and forth, but yeah, no, my feet are, and Lizzie's feet are too big for that. But yeah, that is a good tip to know.
That's Hannah's shoe size, but it's hard to find in kids. So sometimes I'm actually relieved that she can now fit into a woman's.
Right.
But it is, if you can find them, for sure, more cheaper. So.
Right.
Well, thank you, Kelly, so much for everything you've shared. If people want to kind of check in with you and see what you are up to, where can they find you online?
Oh, they could find me at forwornpassports.com, and that's for the number four. And I will have on my website a lot of the stuff that we just talked about. So the itinerary that I recommend. I've also created a cost comparison chart that shows you the different ways that you could take a trip and what it
costs. Wow, that's great.
Right. So a lot of resources there if anybody's interested.
And we'll be sure to link to those in the show notes. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Absolutely. And are you also on social media at all, like Instagram?
Oh, yes, I am. And it's all Forewarn Passports.
Great.
Well, thanks again, Kelly. We love chatting with you. As so often happens with this podcast, now I want to go to the Galapagos even more than, you know, it was always buzzing in my head. But now I'm like, okay, maybe that should be the next family trip.
Oh, I hope so. You will not regret it for sure.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're back with our tip of the week. And since we are talking about international travel, I wanted to make sure that everyone is aware of something that came up for us recently, and that is about your passport expiration dates. So we are headed on a cruise in February, but we were told we needed to have 6 months validity on the passport past the cruise date. So that means that even though our cruise is in February, my husband's passport expires in April, but that's of course not 6 months after February. So we had to go ahead and renew his passport for our trip. And not every country requires that. You could research and find that information out, but it's a good rule of thumb just to consider that if you are traveling internationally, it's a good idea to have 6 months of validity. So 6 months out on your expiration date from your travel dates. So that is my tip.
And I've seen this come up with some clients as well. So I think it's something that maybe they're starting to really look at more closely and crack down on. So whereas before, maybe you could slide on that a little bit, I think now it is something that's a more enforced requirement. So don't take any chances. I mean, the last thing you want is to have to get a last minute passport. I've had to do that when, you know, Hannah's expired like 5 days before our trip and I didn't realize it till we were at the airport and I got a last minute one. But, you know, in some cities you can't even do it same day or, you know, like sometimes the appointments are booked out for weeks. So it's really not something that you want to take a chance on.
Well, and I would say another tip would be to set an alert in your phone right now. Like if you're going to take a trip, look at everyone's passports and figure out that if you're going to assume 6 weeks of processing time for a passport, 6 weeks out from whenever yours expires, plus 6 months, just put a reminder to renew your passport at that point, because we had the same thing happen. We went to go check in for a flight and Mia's passport had expired. And so it was kind of funny, but Paul and Mia actually drove across the border in Canada and Lizzie and I flew during that trip because we needed to get there and we didn't have the time to get even the expedited in Seattle. So
yeah,
definitely need to know. So set an alert now in your phone for 6 months plus 6 weeks.
Do it. And while you're on your phone, go into your favorite podcast app and leave us a review, because Yay! It really helps us out a lot. We do need to have those to be able to be found in the iTunes store or the Google Play store. So if you could go in and leave us a review, we will give you a shout out on a future episode and we would appreciate it very much.
Yeah. As always, thanks for tuning in for another episode of Vacation Mavens.
And we will talk to you next week, where we are finally going to get to our episode, I believe, on saving money for your vacation. It's just we've had some schedule snafus a little bit. I don't know. We've had to shuffle things around, but we're getting there. Promise.
Yeah, that'll be a good episode. So you don't want to miss it. Talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.